Hi, welcome to Forever Paranormal with Dr. Bill and Deb. The term paranormal refers to phenomena and experiences that are beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding and cannot be easily explained through traditional scientific principles. These phenomena often challenge conventional beliefs and are associated with the supernatural, metaphysical, or unexplained aspects of reality. As with any field of inquiry, it is essential to approach the paranormal with an open but critical mind, relying on empirical evidence and logical reasoning to draw conclusions. It's a topic that continues to intrigue and challenge both believers and skeptics alike, and if we can connect a paranormal element to it, we'll talk about it. You'll be surprised by what all can be connected to the paranormal. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and share the show, since it would not be possible without you, our listeners. And as a public service, we would like to let everyone know that you are truly never alone, even if you think you are. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. Please just reach out. Well, hello there, and welcome to this week's episode, where we're going to talk about vampires and also tell you about a real disease that can cause skin to burn in the sun, and yes, drinking human blood seems to relieve some of the symptoms. So, don't forget, vampires, the undead Nosferatu. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, what do you got for us this week? Anything new?
In the news report I want to talk about, the thief was using another man's identity for 35 years and even caused the victim to be imprisoned and spend time in a mental hospital.
Wow, that's amazing.
These two people crossed paths working together at a hot dog cart. The thief was able to use the alias name in every aspect of his life, starting with gaining a fraudulent ID card using the victim's name and birthday.
Okay.
He kept using the alias, moved, and even got married and had a kid who also took the victim's last name.
So he completely took over this man's identity.
Basically.
Yeah, okay.
He illegally obtained a copy of the birth certificate using information he found from Ancestry.com and moved again, took out car and personal loans to the tune of about $200,000. Meanwhile, the victim became homeless and noticed his credit card was being used, but when he tried to explain his plight to the bank, he could not answer the security questions that were created for his account as they had been changed.
Wow.
He showed his social security card and an ID that matched was what was on file, but the phone number did not. Protocol led the bank to call the police, but the fake person was able to provide copies of the social security card and a driver's license. Now, since the real guy was homeless, the police were skeptical and arrested this poor guy for identity theft.
Holy crap.
He continued to proclaim his innocence and cry foul, but a judge deemed him mentally incompetent and sent him to a mental hospital. He eventually pled no contest to the charge, accepting conviction but did not admit guilt, and was sentenced to 2 years and given credit for time spent in the mental hospital and then released.
Holy crap.
This guy contacted many law enforcement agencies in multiple states and eventually got the right person. This detective eventually ended up using DNA from his father to prove who was lying. And when he confronted the thief and was told about the result of the DNA test, this low-down person gave in and confessed to it all. He faces up to 30 years in prison. That being said, Diligence is key, people, when it comes to your personal information and keeping an eye on your credit reports and finances, because this could happen to any of us.
Yeah, it can. And this is really scary that it went on for 35 years. Did the guy give any reason as to why he did it? Was he trying to run from something or hiding from something?
No, he just, I think he's just that type of person. And how it got missed is he kept moving to different locations. He first drained the guy's account, drained his own, bounced checks, and then moved.
Wow.
Got a job in IT. I'm
just flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. That's really an amazing story. Yeah. Thank you for finding that one.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to move on to our story here for this episode. This one that I have, it's one that I have been wanting to do for a long time. It's something I wanted to be when I grew up. Yeah, I know. It's a little weird. But when most boys my age wanted to grow up to be cowboys and firemen and things like that, no, I wanted to be a vampire. I mean, they were just the coolest thing out there. What's not to love? Wealthy, good-looking, immortal, up all night, and had good-looking women everywhere. I mean, that's every kid's dream, right? That very first Dracula movie put something into my brain that still remains to this day. Well, Deb, you got any comment about that?
I don't get the fascination.
I don't understand why you don't. All right, so I would be amazed if there is someone out there that hasn't heard of Dracula, the main character in Bram Stoker's novel and an archetype of pop culture. He is also the epitome of modern-day vampires. While Stoker is said to have based his character off a real person, his notes for writing the book say otherwise, and that it's only partially true. And just a point of note here, his notes can be found in the museum in Philadelphia. Okay, but yes, he found the name Dracula when researching in the book an account of the principalities of Wallachia and Moldavia, but it was a miswritten footnote that had him use Dracula as the name. The footnote, Dracula in the Wallachian language means devil, which is actually not quite right. Another cool thing about this is most people don't know that Stoker actually wrote a follow-up short story called Dracula's Guest. In this, there's a little background given for the Count. He was in life a most wonderful man, soldier, statesman, and alchemist, which latter was the highest development of the scientific knowledge of his time. He had a mighty brain, a learning beyond compare, and a heart that knew no fear and no remorse. There was no branch of knowledge of his time that he did not understand and excel at. Dracula studied the black arts at the Academy of Scholomance in the Carpathian Mountains, overlooking the town of Cebu. Ah, but alas, I could go on forever about Dracula, but this story is not just about him, but vampires in general. In the rich tapestry of folklore and popular legend, the vampire stands out as a captivating and enduring figure. Often depicted as a nocturnal creature, the vampire is typically characterized by its elongated fangs and its predatory nature towards humans. Its preferred mode of subsistence is the consumption of human blood, a trait that has solidified its position as a creature of intrigue and fear. Vampires have held a significant place in the narratives of various cultures, particularly in Europe, for hundreds of years, if not longer. The origins of vampire folklore can be traced back to ancient civilizations where they were often associated with the dead and the undead. Over time, these early representations evolved into the more familiar image of the vampire, thanks in part to the influential works of literature in the 18th and 19th centuries.
Such types of folklore typically elaborate on some small fact. Would you say this is true here?
Yes, it is true here. And it absolutely is.
What fact would you say?
Well, we're going to go over some of those facts as we go down through here about disease and people were in smaller towns. The world wasn't as big then to anybody, you know. They were confined to their areas and, you know, the different plagues and diseases that went along with that and what happens to a body when it decomposes and stuff like that. We're going to cover some of that in here. Okay. And a lot of that led to this. But, you know, vampire, just mention of this word can evoke a myriad of images in our minds. Picture, if you will, a Halloween costume with plastic fangs and a flowing cape. A common stereotype in contemporary society, or perhaps your favorite fanged character from the world of movies or television springs to mind, such as the enduring pair of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. A testament to the enduring appeal of these nocturnal creatures in popular culture. The concept of the vampire has been a part of our collective consciousness for centuries, far longer than one might initially assume. Its roots are deeply entwined in folklore and myth, dating back further than the publication of Bram Stoker's iconic novel Dracula in 1897. The novel was instrumental in shaping the image and modern perception of vampires, but it was merely the latest iteration of a long line of stories and legends about these immortal beings. By the end of the 19th century, authors such as Bram Stoker began to reimagine the traditional narrative surrounding vampires. These authors transformed the image of vampires from that of a serpentine predator to that of tortured romantics, who were not only immune to aging, but were often depicted as a wealthy and strikingly attractive person. This shift in representation marked a significant turning point in the cultural perceptions of vampires. Folklorist Michael E. Bell, in his profound work titled Food for the Dead, On the Trail of New England's Vampires, eloquently articulated the enduring appeal of these supernatural beings. He suggested that the vampire is used as a metaphor and encapsulates a myriad of human nature's facets, including sexuality, bloodlust, the capacity for violence, the allure of transformation, and the enticing concept of eternal life. This multifaceted appeal has made the vampire a fascinating subject for storytellers and audiences alike, providing a rich and timeless source of information and inspiration for the human imagination. The allure of the vampire transcends time and culture, from Nick Cage's character in Renfro to the traditional eerie depictions. The history of vampire folklore is as rich and timeless as the creatures themselves, offering a fascinating glimpse into our cultural fears, fascinations, and the eternal question of what lies beyond the mortal coil. Traces of vampire-like creatures can be found as far back as ancient Greece, where stories were prevalent about mysterious beings that attacked individuals in their sleep and depleted their bodily fluids. These early myths often portrayed these creatures as malevolent entities that threatened the safety and well-being of the community. Before these tales, there are the legends of Sekhmet, the Egyptian goddess and the daughter of Ra, and the Jewish folklore of Lilith, Adam's first wife. The concept of vampiric beings continued to evolve over time, with tales of walking corpses that drank the blood of the living becoming particularly popular in medieval Europe. These stories often emerged during periods of disease and widespread illness as people sought to understand and make sense of the devastation around them. In the absence of modern medical knowledge, the spread of disease was sometimes attributed to these blood-sucking creatures.
Is it possible they were basing this on the behavior of, I don't know, bats or rats, you know, with fangs and causing diseases?
Yeah, it's possible. And I think a lot of the diseases, like we know the plague was caused by rats, mm-hmm. things like that. The fleas that lived on the rats carried the plague. So it's completely possible. But, you know, you got to remember, again, the world was a really small place then because people didn't know people in the next village even. So the knowledge was what they had right there. Mm-hmm. And human nature is, you don't know what it is, you make it up, right?
apparently.
Yeah, so. But you know, Deb, it seems like the vampire's alleged prey also evolved over time. Initially, these creatures were depicted as a threat to the community at large. But however, as folklore and mythology developed, the vampire's focus shifted to preying upon their own families. This change may have reflected the deep-seated fears and anxieties of the time, with the unknown and unpredictable nature of these diseases being externalized and given a form that was both terrifying and eerily familiar. The vampire, in this context, became a symbol of the uncontrollable and unpredictable forces of disease and a creature that threatened the very fabric of family and community. So what are the common characteristics of a vampire, you asked? Well, the allure of vampires in folklore is steeped in a rich and complex history, making it challenging to isolate a specific set of traits that are uniquely theirs. However, there are certain elements that are central to the vampire. A primary characteristic is the consumption of human blood or other vital essences, such as bodily fluids or psychic energy. This is often facilitated by the presence of sharp teeth or fangs, a feature that is almost universally associated with these creatures of the night. Vampires are depicted as undead entities, having been revived in some form after their physical death. This revival often leads to a nocturnal existence, with many vampires rising from their graves or coffins each night, often accompanied by a need to return to the soil from which they originally came.
For context, how does said revival happen?
Well, it based on different folklores, and a lot of it is from the consumption of the blood, you become the undead. And in Stoker's novel, Dracula made a pact with the devil against God. So there's different types of revivals and how it happens, I guess. But, you know, the physical appearance of vampires is another intriguing aspect of this legend. They are typically described as having pale skin, ranging from being grotesquely to eerily beautiful. This diversity in appearance is a reflection of the many narratives from which the vampire lore has been woven since the first tales. A less discussed but equally fascinating trait is the alleged inability of vampires to cast a reflection or a shadow. This characteristic often extends to an inability to be captured in photographs or recorded on film. This peculiarity adds another layer of mystery to these already enigmatic creatures, further fueling the fascination that they hold in the realm of folklore.
And what was the explanation for that trait?
Well, there's different theories of thought, schools of thought, I should say, on this. And some is that because they're dead, they have no reflection. Other theories are because they're dead, they actually live on the other side of a shiny object like a mirror, right? And since they're in the universe, the parallel universe of the mirror, and come in and out, they can't reflect in that mirror because they're on the back side of it. So there's a lot of different schools of thought. But, you know, what about modern-day science and belief so? We already know that vampires are blamed for many diseases, including the plague and tuberculosis. And this went on way longer than you may think. In the 18th century, the intriguing practice of exhuming suspected vampires was reportedly initiated in the regions of Eastern Europe, primarily in nations such as Romania and Bulgaria. This peculiar custom then spread to Western Europe, reaching countries including France and England. Then, by the 1700s, this practice had made its way across the Atlantic, finding a foothold in rural areas of New England, particularly in the state of Rhode Island. This period saw a series of vampire panics that persisted well into the late 1800s. A fascinating testament to the far-reaching influence of European folklore and the power of community belief in these rural communities.
Why Rhode Island? That's pretty specific.
Yeah, Rhode Island was very specific. They had some settlers from Romania and stuff in that area, and they had a really bad tuberculosis outbreak and things like that there.
Hmm.
and people were dying. And, you know, when you're in that small area and you're in those small houses, one person in the family gets the disease, it pretty runs rampant through the family. So therefore, had to be a vampire because they're all feeding off the family, right? So that's why Rhode Island in particular. Then, as a matter of fact, though, in 2005, The Guardian, a reader-funded publication, covered a vampire-slaying ritual in a Romanian village that was performed after a deceased laborer, Petra Toma's family, decided he'd become a Strigoi in 2003. 6 men exhumed the body, staked it, sprinkled it with garlic, and opened Toma's ribcage with a pitchfork. They took out his heart, burned it, and drank the ashes in a glass of water. Ugh. In neighboring Bulgaria, a 700-year-old skeleton discovered in 2012 points to the region's own vampire-slaying customs. Pinned down with a rock to keep the dead from rising, it had also been stabbed through the chest with an iron rod, and his teeth had been removed, apparently so he couldn't bite anybody after he was dead. Meanwhile, in a mass grave of the 16th century of plague victims unearthed by archaeologists in Italy in 2006, they found where a brick was wedged in one female skeleton's jaw, which at that time was an exorcism technique used on suspected vampires in Europe. Wow, morbid. Telling you. Then, in the U.S., the most famous vampire is probably that of Mercy Brown. Mercy once resided in the quaint town of Exeter, Rhode Island. She was the cherished daughter of George Brown, a hard-working farmer who tended to his land and livestock with dedication and care. However, this peaceful existence was shattered when tuberculosis, a formidable and merciless disease, claimed the lives of many family members, Mercy included, in the late 1800s. In the context of time, the community grappling with the unexplainable loss sought to lay the blame on a scapegoat. The concept of the undead was a common explanation for multiple deaths within the family. This belief led to the gruesome practice of exhuming the remains of the deceased family members in search of signs of vampirism. When Mercy's body was exhumed, it was discovered that her body had not undergone severe decomposition. This was not surprising, though, considering her body was actually laid to rest in an above-ground vault, which was a common practice during the harsh New England winters. However, this discovery sparked accusations from the townspeople, who pointed fingers at Mercy, labeling her a vampire and a cause of her family's demise. Their suspicions led to a chilling act. The townspeople, in their fervor and panic, removed Mercy's heart, incinerated it, and then fed the ashes to her ailing brother. This drastic measure was taken in the belief that it would cure his illness. But unfortunately, the brother succumbed to the disease shortly after, which further fueled the belief in Mercy's alleged vampirism. The story of Mercy Brown serves as a stark reminder of the power of superstition and fear in the face of the unknown. But can vampires be real? Well, yeah, sort of. In the annals of history, though, it was not uncommon for individuals presenting with unfamiliar physical or emotional symptoms to be branded as vampires. This was a time when the boundaries of medical knowledge were far less defined and the unknown was often attributed to supernatural causes. Consequently, the label of vampire was frequently applied to those grappling with mysterious ailments of any type. One such affliction that has garnered attention from researchers is porphyria, a blood disorder that can induce severe blisters on skin when exposed to sunlight. This rare condition affects the hemoglobin in the blood, which can lead to a variety of symptoms, including neurological and gastrointestinal issues. Interestingly, according to a report in Scientific American, some symptoms of porphyria can be temporarily alleviated by ingesting human blood, a practice that bears a striking resemblance to the lore surrounding vampires. And just for the record, this disease was actually discovered by Hippocrates in ancient Greece. So yeah, they've known about it for a long time. Another disease that has been suggested as a potential catalyst for the vampire myth is rabies. This viral infection, primarily transmitted through animal bites, like bats and rats, can cause a range of symptoms from fever and headache to hallucinations and hydrophobia. The latter symptom, hydrophobia in particular, may have contributed to the vampire myth, as the fear of water is a common trait associated with these supernatural beings. I wasn't aware they had a fear of all water. I thought it was just holy water. Oh, but I learned something. And then you have a goiter, a thyroid disease. And it has also been proposed as a possible culprit. This condition can result in the enlargement of the thyroid gland, leading to a visible swelling in the neck, and in severe cases, this can cause difficulty in breathing and swallowing, which may have been misconstrued as a supernatural ailment in the past. These diseases, among others, have been suggested as potential explanations for the enduring vampire myth. While the true origins of this legend remained elusive, these medical theories provide a fascinating glimpse into the intersection of history, culture, and medicine.
But over time, we have found other explanations. Why doesn't this myth die?
Well, because it's just cool, number one. I mean, who doesn't want to be a vampire? And, you know, even like with some of the diseases of pathoria and stuff, there's still like 100 people a year that have this disease. So it still goes on. And I'm sure some are in rural communities to this day where genetics are more intermingled, you know, that there's not as many people around, a lot of interbreeding. Then in the modern era, the pervasive fears of the past surrounding vampires have been largely silenced by the advancements of science and medicine. However, it may surprise some to learn that there are still individuals who identify as vampires. Yeah, in a very different sense than the historical counterparts, though. These are ordinary people who, in a perhaps misguided effort to maintain their health, consume small amounts of blood. The communities of self-identified vampires can be found scattered across the internet and in cities and towns around the globe. In an attempt to avoid rekindling the superstitions of the past, though, these modern vampires tend to keep to themselves, conducting their, air quotes, feeding rituals, which often involve the consensual donation of blood from willing participants privately. Then there is a subset of modern vampires who do not ingest human blood, instead claiming to feed off the energy or life force of others. Many of these individuals assert that if they do not, air quotes again, feed regularly, they may experience symptoms of agitation or depression. This notion of feeding off energy rather than blood is often referred to as a psychic vampire and psychic vampirism. The concept of the vampire was propelled into mainstream popular culture following the publication of Bram Stoker's seminal work, Dracula. Since then, the legendary persona of Count Dracula has been the focus of countless films, books, and television shows, further solidifying the fascination that people have with horror and the supernatural. As a result, vampires, be they real or imagined, are likely to continue inhabiting our collective consciousness for many years to come. The enduring allure of vampires can be attributed to a variety of factors. For some, the vampire represents a rebellion against society's norms and expectations, as they are often portrayed as creatures that exist on the fringes of society. For others, the vampire embodies a deep-seated fear of death and the unknown. Regardless of the reason, the fascination with vampires shows no signs of waning, and they continue to captivate and intrigue people around the world. So, Deb, what do you think about vampires? You for them or against them? Well, I should ask it this way from the Twilight series of movies. Are you pro-wolf or pro-fang, pro-vampire?
I don't get the fascination of either. Sucking blood and eternal life simply don't coexist in my small brain, nor do I desire the traits of a vampire. I will, however, give it thumbs up for creativity.
And again, how can you not admire the vampire? So, folks, with that, we're going to go ahead and close this one out. And until next time, when we discuss another tale yet to be told. Thank you for listening, and remember to like and share the show. We would also appreciate a 5-star rating wherever possible to help new listeners find the show. We welcome all questions or comments you may have about this or any other episode, and our contact information can be found in the show notes of this episode. You can also follow us at foreverparanormal.com. And if you'd like to support us, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/foreverparanormal. The links to these are also in the show notes of this episode.